For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Now, back to the Grape Bar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Great to be with Bernie Miklas. Our visits with him, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer. Bernie, happy Easter to you and your family.
Well, same to you, Tom, and Angie, and those, I'm going to call them kids, because the last time I saw your daughters, they were, in fact, kids, so... Well, they'll always be kids.
Yeah.
Happy Easter to everybody at the Ackermans.
Appreciate it. Yeah, our girls were up this morning and still got those Easter baskets, ages 18 and 14. They had a great, great morning. Lots of chocolate was handed out. We let the dogs go into another room just in case the chocolate, you know, hits the floor. We don't want that.
Yeah, I got you.
We don't want that. But the boys got their own treats. They're doing well as well. Appreciate you, man. Yesterday was a tough one for those Blues fans because it was so tantalizing. I mean, they come out. They're hitting everything that moves, and that also means that Winnipeg was possessing the puck a lot. We'll get to that in a minute. But they're hitting, and they're hitting, and it just it's exciting, and they take the lead, and Kyrou's got the goal, and then Winnipeg just did their thing. And the Blues have some learning to do, I think, when it comes to how to conduct yourself in the playoffs.
It was there for the taking, as they say. Well, what a wonderful opportunity. They're up 3-2. You could tell that Winnipeg's feeling the pressure. Their goaltender was feeling the pressure, and he's had a recent history of some pretty bad breakdowns in the postseason. Hellebuck, who, even though he's exceptional regular season goaltender, and then I thought at one turning point was, and not to put it on him because Hellebuck is a great goaltender, but you know Jordan Kyrou had a chance to give the Blues a 4-2 lead on the breakaway, and Kyrou. Hellebuck made an excellent save. And then after that, he settled down. And then I think Winnipeg kind of exhaled and got into their game. And that led to the third period. The Blues hardly had any possession. They hardly had any shots. They had hardly any scoring chances. And, Winnipeg totally dominated that third period. I mean, just totally dominated. I mean, credit to them because they've been shaky in the postseason, as good as they are. They've been really shaky. And they pulled themselves together, and they put the hammer down, and the Blues had no response in the third period. And, of course, as you mentioned, the young guys, we saw, unfortunately, some pretty dumb penalties. And neighbors and Bull Duke, they know this, and they're going to learn from it. But I thought the Blues did enough really good things to where – you know, I'm not going to overreact and say, well, they had their chance. That's it. It's over. No, because Winnipeg, there's still some underlying vulnerability there. But obviously, the Blues got to go get game two.
Yes, they do. And, yeah, I mean, it's intense, that building. And, look, I can see Enterprise Center. If I lean a little bit this way, I can look out the window here downtown and see Enterprise Center. Enterprise Center is going to be rocking on Thursday night. I mean, that's an 8:30 announced start time. It'll be more like 9 o'clock. That crowd will be as lubricated a hockey crowd as you ever heard. I mean, whether it's 0-2 or 1-1, but if it is 1-1, look out. I don't see the Blues intimidated at all by the Jets or the crowd or anything. But that whole thing can get you amped up and make you do dumb stuff, can it?
Yeah, it can. And, you know, I have I think I'm in the minority here. And believe me, I'm not looking for anything to be negative about. I mean, because we all highlighted what the Blues did wrong or what didn't go right for them. But I don't know whether I was reading Jeremy Rutherford or someone else, but you know, a lot of people are making a huge deal about how much the Blues out-hit Winnipeg. And by the way, I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. But when, as the writer quoted Ken Hitchcock once said, he said, you know, Hitchcock was never worked up about how many hits you put on the other team. Because he'd say, you know, when you're hitting somebody, it also means you're away from the puck. So I think that if this series goes seven games, or it even gets to a sixth game, I think if the Blues have been out hitting them over and over and over again, I think, yeah, there's a chance it could catch up, and it's a chance it could lower some of the resolve on the Jets side. So we'll see. But, you know, hitting for the sake of hitting, it's also got to be relatively smart. But you hope you can wear them down over a long series. But if you don't have a long series, it's not going to matter.
Does this Blues team have the type of team that they had in 2019? That team, man, they were heavy and they just beat the crap out of you. I mean, I'm not sure that this is that team. That they have a lot more speed even than that team had, I feel like, even without Dylan Holloway.
They do. And the one thing, the similarities with these two teams is the 2019 and 25 Blues is they're both exceptional at 5-on-5 hockey, which is where your foundation is. Very, very strong. The Blues were one of the best once Berube took over. They were the best 5-on-5 team in the NHL. And the same thing happened with Montgomery since he took over. They have Berube was an excellent coach for that team. You know, Montgomery's an excellent coach for this team. And although they don't have a Pietrangelo, you know, this defensive core I think is pretty deep. I think the depth overall is pretty good, but you know, you mentioned it at the beginning. There's a lot relative to the 2019 team. There's a lot of inexperience on this team as well, and so you know, how much will the younger guys learn from you know game one? I think they'll learn a lot because we respect the heck out of them as far as their approach, their maturity, their competitiveness. And, you know, Binnington's got to be the Binnington. And I thought Binnington was fine yesterday. I can't really fuss over anything he did. His teammates just abandoned him, basically, in the third period. But, you know, that Binnington and this Binnington, the 2025 Binnington is going to have to steal games the way the 2019 Binnington did. So there's some other things, too. You know, I think that fourth line in 2019 was just absolutely amazing. I think this fourth line's good, but it's not to the level of what we saw in 2019. And I think not having Holloway really hurts. Nobody wants to make excuses this year, but he was a great, great Blue after Montgomery took over.
Sure was. You know, I don't love that Hellebuck only had to make 14 saves and get a win, that you only had 17 shots. But I will use some reverse psychology there and say maybe you got in his head a little bit because you scored three times. And also, you know, if Winnipeg's going to be possessing the puck this much, and I don't see a complete reversal of that in game two, you might see a little bit more of that. Maybe he is a little cold. You know, perhaps you could take advantage of the fact that he's not getting warmed up. He's not seeing a lot of shots. I'm just thinking out loud here. Perhaps you might be able to catch him off guard, but you got to get the puck to the net.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because that was a huge part of the game, the fact that they didn't make him work all that hard, especially after they had the lead. I mean, the start was fantastic. No one could complain about that. But, you know, this is a guy, and again, he was the best goaltender in the NHL this season, you know, and been maybe one of the top two or three regular season goalies in this league for, you know, several years now. However, you know, it's like the Tony La Russa thing, you know, with baseball. It's like, hey, man, you got to separate regular season from postseason. It's two different things. You know, it's postseason pressure's on because one game goes wrong and it changes the whole series. It's not like that during the regular season. And, you know, coming into this series with the Blues, Hellebuck had his record as a goaltender in his last 28 games, postseason games, was 9-19. And he also you know, the past two seasons, the previous two seasons, you know, they got bounced out in five games both times, and his save percentage is well below 900. So he has been vulnerable in the postseason. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. And they've had a lot of early exits, and that core group is still there. I think maybe they're more seasoned now, more grizzled, so to speak, but it's still the same core group that has kind of spit it up in the postseason many, many times. And so that's what the Blues have to do. They have to put the pressure on them, in terms of the forecheck, keeping the puck in the offensive zone, peppering Hellebuyck with shots. They have to get that pressure going, but they also have to get the psychological pressure put on that team. Where that team's like, reminds them of their recent postseason failures. And I thought that was happening yesterday. It was happening up until the time where the Blues just kind of let their foot off the accelerator.
I agree. You know, if you put 17 shots on them, this is what I would say anyway. I'd say, look, we put 17 shots on these guys and we darn near won the game. I mean, let's go right here. Let's put some pressure on this goaltender. We got a long way to go. Let's get back home in a 1-1 series and let that place light up, and it's going to be a blast. But the game is tomorrow night in Winnipeg, 6:30 start. I don't see the Blues scared whatsoever. It should be a really fun game. Let's spend the last 4 or 5 minutes here on the Cardinals. I'm not sure what to make of this. I was asked this morning by Scott Jagow. I don't have an answer. The Blues are 8-4 at home, and they're 1-8 on the road. Why are they so poor on the road? Is it because of the competition? Is it because they're putting pressure on themselves offensively? I don't know what it is.
Well, their first road series, at Boston, you know, obviously they lost all three games, but they hit really well. They had a great offensive series, and their starting pitching was really bad. But since then, if you look at their last 12 games, that of course goes through yesterday, they're only averaging 3.1 runs per game. And they've scored two runs or fewer 6 out of the 12 games. They're hitting .230 overall, and you know, very few home runs and very few extra base hits. And over the last 12 games since they left Boston, they're hitting .214 with runners in scoring position. Now, that's the bad thing. The offense has dried up, and we're seeing some guys that were doing really well starting to kind of struggle, and you know, things are going the wrong way as a team and also for individuals offensively. But the good thing to take out of it, if we're going to evaluate the Cardinals over these last 12 games, I think we got to evaluate them all the way around. The starting pitching over these last 12 games has been simply outstanding, a 2.42 ERA. And Miles Michaelis has a 4.66 ERA during this time, but all the other guys, their ERAs are exceptional. And Libitor has been exceptional. And Palante's pitched great. Matt's pit had a great start. Sonny Gray was great. Fetty, his last two starts, one run in 13 innings. Gray, one run in 12 innings. So it's sort of the reversal of what we saw in Boston, you know, where, you know, the Cardinals pitching just got destroyed, but their hitters were up for the fight. But since then, it's the other way around. Their starting pitching has been outstanding, and the hitters things have just fallen apart here lately. And the bullpen, let's face it, and I'm not trying to sound like Mr. Know-It-All, and I apologize if I do, but I kept saying before the season, look, that bullpen last year is the reason why the Cardinals were able to finish with a winning record. That was one of the best bullpens any Cardinal team any decade has ever had. And I just said, look, it's just not – you can't expect them to repeat that. You just simply can't expect them to be that good again. They can be good, but they're not going to be that invincible. And unfortunately, so far, that's the case.
I'm sorry, I couldn't get my mic turned on. Samuel was asking, no Bernie Cam this morning. Well, we don't do the Bernie Cam on sports on a Sunday morning. That's a Gas House Gang thing only, I do believe. But, you know, the Gas House Gang brings to mind, we're going to have a good week. We will have Ollie Marmol on again on Tuesday. Do you see my X account? Again, I shouldn't judge based on what I see there, but it lit up Ollie Marmol. I mean, do you see any fault towards Marmol over the weekend? I guess in particular the walk-off Lindor game.
Well, I got mixed feelings on it. I know in sports talk radio we're not supposed to have mixed feelings. We got to have a hot take. I get it. Because, first of all, I winced when I heard Ollie say, Well, there's no manager ever, you know, would bring his closer in and tie game on the road. And it, I had really, really unfortunate flashbacks to when the Cardinals got eliminated by the Giants in the 2014 NLCS. And the final three games were really close. And Trevor Rosenthal, who had a massive season that year, he never appeared in a game. And I asked Matheny about it after they got eliminated. And I said, listen, you know, Rosenthal was ready. And you chose to bring in Waka, and I don't know, would you do that all over again? You know, would you bring in Rosenthal? And he just looked at me with just total disdain and said, like, nope, you never bring your closer in a tie game, you know, late. And here's my point. This is why I say I have mixed feelings. You can't have that as a policy where you never, ever, 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 ever deviate from it. All situations are different. And when you've got the very best hitters in the Mets lineups coming up, 1, 2, 3 in order, first grade hitter, second grade hitter, third grade hitter, I think you send Helsley out there to take on their best. And then, yeah, after that, you're going to have to hold your breath about what happens after that if he gets you through the ninth. It wasn't an easy decision. But I do think that, you know, with the exceptional quality of the hitters that were coming up, I want my best guy to keep the game alive rather than, put a vulnerable guy in there who's much more likely to have a bad inning and have a sudden death loss. Right.
Yeah.
It's a tough question. Anybody who says it's all or nothing, there's no gray area. Well, that's kind of what's wrong with the way things are today. You know, it's either all or nothing. You know, there's no middle ground to have a good discussion about it, but I just don't like it as a policy.
I don't either. It's fair to question, I guess, if Helsley's okay. I mean, they haven't said otherwise, but you know, we haven't seen him since Wednesday when he closed out that game. I'm assuming he's fine, but perhaps there's something that we don't know. I always have to leave that out there too. Maybe they want to rest Helsley a little bit more than they normally do. I don't know.
Right. And I think you need to take into account like who's coming up for the other team, mm-hmm. You know, and the Mets are great at home, and those guys love that environment. And Citi Field is on fire these days. I mean, nothing's like the old Shea Stadium in terms of having a raucous crowd, but what we're seeing with Citi Field, you know, with the way the franchise has moved up under the new ownership, those weekend games in Citi Field are they're just a circus, you know. It is like the old days, and so that's another thing. I mean, do you want to insert Fernandez into that situation, or you know, would you be better off with Helsley? I think that's a kind of decision where you got to take the policy and put it aside and just be more pragmatic about the situation. That's just me. I've never managed a game.
No, I hear that. I felt it too. I saw it. It was like you saw it coming. You know, Fernandez comes in, God bless him, but here comes the top of the order, and it's just a matter of time before they get you. By the way, I picked the Mets to win the World Series, and I'm going to stay with it. Even though they were banged up to start the year, I think there's something magical going on there, to be honest with you. I think they're really good. Hopefully Sonny Gray can throw cold water on the whole thing today, but Mets are good.
You know, and the thing about them is they have all kinds of starting pitching injuries, and they're starting pitching the ERA. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's been really, really good. And and the scary thing, if you don't like the Mets, if you're a Phillies fan or a Braves fan or whatever, you know, Soto hasn't even gotten going yet. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of what he's capable of doing, you know. So and they've had a relatively quiet lineup. So they still got a lot in them, a lot more to do in terms of just wreaking havoc on pitchers.
Sure do. My friend, we have spent a lot of time together this morning, and I appreciate the extra time. I hope you have a wonderful Easter. Say hello to Kirsten and your great family, and let's catch up tomorrow.
All right, Tom, and happy Easter to everyone listening. And I'm going to say it one more time. I haven't said it for a while. It is a privilege to be on KMOX. Thank you.
Man, thank you. And you can see him, too. He's on Sports Hub STL. He's on with Katie Wu. He's doing so many great things out there, writing, But Bernie Miklas is so true to us. We just love having him in our KMOX family. It is an absolute pleasure every single time. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll break down a little bit more of the Blues. We'll hear from Jim Montgomery. We'll hear from Jordan Bennington. And then we'll hear from Curtis Francois, the owner of Worldwide Technology Raceway, in our final segment of this hour, and a whole other hour coming with John Mozeliak at 11:30, Lutz at 11:15, sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.